Radio.
Everybody, welcome to the Comic Zone on WorldTalkRadio.com. I'm your host, Vincent Zerzolo, broadcasting to you from the Metropolis Collectibles Gallery in New York City. Today's show is going to be great. My guests are two very close friends from my old hometown, Rockaway Beach, New York. Comic fans Andrew Nussbaum and Matt Sarnoff will be joining me to take a walk down our pop culture memory lane. We'll revisit our golden age of comic collecting and oh so much more. The show starts after these messages from our sponsors. Don't go away.
New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd through 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City. Featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guests of honor include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, visit www.nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advance purchase at www.nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need. NYComicCon.com.
Comics Guarantee, LLC, also known as CGC, is the comic book hobby's only independent third-party expert grading and certification service. CGC's restoration detection, pedigree, and grading experts are known and trusted all around the world for their keen eyes, knowledge of comic book history, and consistent grading. CGC has the best tamper-evident, state-of-the-art comic holder our hobby has ever seen for safe storage of your favorite comic books. Go to www.cgccomics.com to find out how to submit your favorite comic books for certification and to see why the world's top collectors and sellers use CGC for safely buying and selling comics through the mail or on the Internet. For more information, call toll-free 877-662-6642 or visit CGC at www.cgccomics.com. CGC. It just makes sense.
You're listening to World Talk Radio, where the world comes to talk.
Welcome back to the Comic Zone on WorldTalkRadio.com. Some really great news. The Big Apple Comic Convention, 10-year anniversary is coming up. It's hard to believe. I remember back when Michael Carbonaro and Vince Gula and myself, we banded together and started the Show Must Go On show after the Greenberg Conventions were basically stopped the day before the convention was supposed to happen. Literally, day of setup, Fred Greenberg walks out to all the dealers online and tells them that he didn't get his floor plan approved in time and thought it wouldn't be a problem, and basically the people at the New York Coliseum shut him down. And then we drove all over Manhattan with Fred trying to find a place, and basically if he couldn't find a place big enough, he was giving up and just shutting the show doors. So we actually found a smaller location that was a few blocks away and laid out a deposit right then and there on the spot and had literally about 24 hours to put an entire show together, get the word out to people, and really make something happen. And it was possibly one of the best experiences of my life, and in that we were able to put this show together, sell out the room. We had more artists than we did dealers, and it was a magical experience, and we gave everybody, it was free admission for everybody who wanted to come to the show. And my Michael, in honor of the 10-year anniversary, is doing the same thing for his January 19th and 20th show here in New York City. Mike Carbonaro, he's the promoter of the convention. So that's going to be Friday, January 19th from 1 to 8 p.m., and then Saturday, January 20th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Free admission, which means they're also going to get a lot of people coming in off the streets who normally wouldn't go to a comic convention to come on down. And that's going to be taking place at the Pavilion, 401 7th Avenue at 33rd Street. That's directly across the street from Madison Square Garden. Once again, this is a fan appreciation show, free admission, tons of comic books, collectibles, DVDs, guests, writers, artists, celebrities. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope anybody in the New York or East Coast area that can make it will make it. It should be a great time. Okay, on with the show. For the last 3 years, I've been running the Comic Zone radio show, and I wanted to do a show where I had a few friends on, and we talked about our childhood and collecting comics and all the fun we had as kids. I realize now, being 35 years old on my way to 36, that finally I think we're really grown-ups, and we're looking back on these special moments in our lives and appreciating the good times we had and seeing how great it was to have these have comic books in our life when we were growing up. My guests are two great friends of mine. Matt Sarnoff is actually probably the first friend I ever had. our mothers met while we were like infants in strollers and became friends, and then we became friends as we were growing up, and we spent a lot of time reading comic books. And Andrew Nussbaum is a friend I met in elementary school, and we stayed fast friends throughout our entire lives, I guess. We went to elementary school, junior high school, and college together. So, hey, Matt, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hi, V. Thanks
hey,
for having
me. Hey, V. How are you?
Hey, good to have you guys here.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Andrew, how are you?
Pretty good.
So, let's take a moment to talk about growing up in Rockaway Beach. And Matt, how would you describe our neighborhood to someone who's never been there?
Oh, I think it would depend who I was talking to, but in general,
in a good way.
Yeah, just because there's so many different angles on it. But in general, you know, it's a narrow peninsula, you know, off of Long Island, and it's there's one bridge takes you to Queens, one bridge takes you to Brooklyn, and as a result, it's a very isolated community, which made it a very safe and wonderful place to grow up. It also is somewhat sheltered. A lot of people there never seem to leave, you know, even for generations, which also has its pros and cons. But the character of it, I think, is basically that it was once a beach bungalow community, and then I think working class people with an instinct for real estate, obviously, started to settle their permanent residences there. And as a result, there's a lot of cops and firemen. There's a lot of my parents were teachers. I know both your parents were small business owners. So I think it's generally a microcosm of New York City, and a generally a sort of middle class neighborhood. There's some people who are probably, you know, working class, and there are also some people who are quite wealthy.
Okay.
So it has a full range in that, just like a lot of other places in New York.
And Andrew, when you think about our neighborhood and you know, how when we were kids we were able to get our hands on comic books, where did you go to buy your comic books when you were a little kid?
Well, it started, first of all, I just want to say about Matthew's comments, ditto, all the way. But,
okay.
But besides that, getting comic books, acquiring comic books for the first time, I mean, it was easy. We were growing up in the mid to late 70s, early 80s, where, you know, they were still on the rack in everything from your delis to pharmacies. You know, they were everywhere, so you could grab them. At the beginning, we didn't really know what was collectible and what wasn't collectible. We just kind of knew what we liked, and I remember being able to just go to the store for groceries, grab a couple of comic books before I even really knew anything about them. So they were quite accessible. Once we started collecting seriously, you had stores, I don't know if I can I mention their name?
Sure, absolutely.
You know, you had stores in Brooklyn. They usually named it for the location of where the store was. You know, Flatbush Comics in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue. And
yeah,
then we would trek into the city and go to East Side or West Side Comics, which were, you know, two of the first stores that pretty much specialized in selling, you know, collectible comic books and up-to-date comic books. So, and of course the conventions, later on when we really got serious, we would go to those whenever we could. Somebody's father would take, you know, a group of kids and we'd buy everything we could.
Yeah, you know, everything you're saying, it's like a floodgate of memories. I remember, I lived very close to 129th Street, which was a sort of a tiny little commerce street in our neighborhood, and tons of little delis and stores.
And general stores.
And general store. And I would run up there or walk up there or ride my bike up there or whatever I had to do after scrounging through the couch in the house to find some spare change. And I'd go and buy a 25-cent comic book or 30-cent or 50-cent, whatever the price was at the time.
Yeah.
I'd go to Allen's. There was Allen's, which was a little kind of general store, and then there was an old luncheonette with an old Chinese man who barely spoke English.
Yeah,
sold candy, and I remember there was a spinner rack in there, and I used to buy the anything with Spider-Man, and I would try to always. I think there was a Marvel Fun and Games, I think it was called, and you could play and do all these different drawings and draw mazes, like help Daredevil go through the maze or something like that. And it was fun stuff. And then, of course, I remember one time, I think it was Matt's birthday, where we went out to Long Island and we went to a comic show.
Yeah.
And I remember that at that time, Thor 337, 38, and 39, the first Beta Ray Bill's appearance, that was the hot book, and we were all looking around the convention trying to buy it, and I remember that being a really fun day, and Matt's dad taking us to that convention. What do you guys, in terms of memories or fondest memories, in terms of, you know, related to comics or pop culture, what were your fondest memories of growing up, in Rockaway Beach? Matt, go ahead.
We had a lot of adventures. I think our imaginations were stimulated by things like comic books. When we were home inside, we would read the books, we would draw the characters, we would create our own fantasy stories related to the characters or related to stories that we made up. But then similarly, when we were playing outside, we played a lot of football and other, organized sports, but we also acted out a lot of our adventurous, fantasies, whether we just running through the neighborhood or riding on bikes. I think it was a great time, to be a kid, and it was a great place to be a kid.
Yeah.
Because I think that I think our all the pistons were firing and our imaginations were allowed to really breathe.
Andrew, what about you, Andrew, in terms of our childhood growing up in Rockaway, in terms of connecting it into pop culture events, Star Wars or comic books or Dungeons and Dragons? What was big for you? What do you remember most from being a kid?
Well, I got to say that I agree with Matt again, but I think you'd both agree with that. We were really lucky. I mean, we grew up in the age of, these film school guys, the first of them. George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and Scorsese and Cameron and all these guys who, and later Spike Lee, all these people who were coming about doing great things in the movies. And we were little kids, but we were seeing some of the best movies that have come out in the past, since 100 years ago when moving film was, first in its infancy. But tangible things were comic books still. We could go see the movies and emulate them, and that was our real in-tune, aspect of pop culture. But with comic books, we could get into the stories, we could draw them. I know that everybody had their hand, especially Matthew, who's a fantastic artist, in trying to emulate the characters in the books and draw them as close to what we saw in the comics. And so it was really our little piece of reality where, we could draw comic books, we could write our own comic books, we could obviously read them. The movies were still kind of on a horizon of, possibly in the future, but, we held it up on such a pedestal that comic books were more in our tangible, grasp.
I remember I loved to draw when we were kids, but you both were really superior artists. Matt, when you used to sleep over, we used to have we would sit with a piece of paper and two pencils, and I would draw the beginning of a picture, and then you'd continue it. And by the end of the night, we'd have this whole picture filled with drawings. Everything had to connect to one another, but nothing had to make any sense. And it was just fun. And each one of us would just spend 10 minutes drawing something and pass the paper over to the next one. And Andrew, I remember you drawing in your best John Byrne impression, all the X-Men, and also obviously Andrew was really probably one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. He, when we were kids, he used to draw these great cartoons goofing on our friends, and that was always funny. Hey, guys, you know, really good news. I hear our good buddy Jonas Rader is on hold, and let's bring Jonas on online with us live. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. Jonas?
Hello?
Jonas? Oh, my producer said Jonas was there.
That figures.
Friggin' Jonas. So, but I remember all us drawing a lot when we were kids. And Matt, I remember us actually trying to make a comic book once at home, and that was just a ton of fun. And I loved how we always had this kind of connection with these. You know, whether it was Star Wars toys or Dungeons and Dragons, even playing, I remember there was a superhero game called Villains and Vigilantes.
Yeah.
And even in junior high school, I remember starting up I took the attack matrix from Dungeons and Dragons and applied it to wrestling, and we'd have a wrestling game. And we'd made our own superhero games, too, where you could be Silver Surfer or anybody. It was just so much fun. Do you guys remember what games you were really into, Andrew? Anything like that you remember playing as a kid that you just absolutely loved, and every time you see it?
Laser Blast.
What's that?
Laser Blast.
Laser Blast. Is that Jonas?
Yep.
Oh, he's there. Welcome. What was Laser Blast?
You don't remember it?
I don't remember Laser Blast. What was
Come
that?
Come on. It was an Atari game.
Speak up a little bit. I can barely hear you.
It was an Atari game.
Yeah?
And you had a missile, you had like a cannon at the bottom of the screen, and these spaceships used to go
on the
top.
Isn't that Missile Command?
You shoot them like, ptow, ptow, ptow.
Isn't that Missile Command?
Is that pop culture?
Jonas, we're going to have to let you go now, I'm sorry. You're making too many obscure references.
I apologize.
Hey, Joe, what else do you remember in terms of games and stuff? Board games, did you like to play when we were kids?
Board
There's
game?
Only one. There's only one.
What game?
There's only one, and you all have to say it in conjunction on
Risk.
The show for the benefit of everyone.
Is it Risk?
That's it.
Risk, yeah. We used to love playing Risk.
I think it fed our fantasy of world domination, starting with Rockaway.
You can have Rockaway.
the greater North America, and onward to Eastern Asia.
Yes.
Joe, when you were a little kid, what comic books did you love to read?
Well, obviously the X-Men. I'm sure this has been covered.
No, we actually haven't started on the comic books. We've just been talking about our pop culture. But, Joe, do me a favor. I can barely hear you. Just really speak up a little bit more.
Well, either I speak up or I get fired. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, Jonas just started his new job. Okay, good point. All right, so Joe, what comics were you reading?
The X-Men.
So did you like the X-Men?
Yes.
Who was your favorite character in the X-Men?
Wolverine was my favorite.
Why did you like Wolverine so much?
Because you couldn't really kill him. Like, you could light him on fire, and then he just regenerates.
Him.
Yeah, he was. I mean, just the fact that he has knives coming out of his hands, I mean, that was a bit more raw and violent, I think, than a lot of the other, you know, kind of weapons that were a little more indirect. I mean, this guy had six knives.
He was primal.
You know, I mean, and he would, you know, they were careful. He mostly would carve up robots. You know, he didn't kill too many living organisms. But nevertheless, I mean, I think that was just an eye-opening breakthrough in graphic violence for all of us, you know?
Hey, guys, we're going to break for our first commercial, and we're going to be back after we hear from our sponsors right here on the Comic Zone on worldtalkradio.com.
Wow.
Okay, on our next segment, we're going to talk some more about comic books and our other favorite topic, which, if you can't guess, it's not Star Wars. We're going to talk a little bit about girls.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back on the Comic Zone in 2 minutes.
Started to sneeze, had a cigarette and a cup of tea. I looked in the mirror, what did I see?
Care for a mint?
The best place to find CGC mint-grade comics is at www.colossuscomics.com. Colossus Comics, Inc. is known for quality eBay auctions and for its CGC 9.8 subscription service for new comics. As a CGC 9.8 subscriber, you can choose from any ongoing series. Colossus guarantees a CGC 9.8 grade on every current issue of your series, delivered to you along with unslabbed reading copies. For shipping included, $33 a month. Colossus Comics subscribers also get first access plus discount pricing on CGC 10.0 and 9.9 copies of their title when available. To become a 9.8 subscriber or link to Colossus Comics auctions, visit ColossusComics.com. Do you know what your collection is worth? Do you really know? Chances are the comics you buy and sell have hidden value in them. Classics Incorporated specializes in discovering this hidden value for you. In addition to a vast array of services offered, such as restoration, conservation, removal, and recreation, Classics Incorporated's founder, Matt Nelson, offers expert advice on your investments. Whether you're ready to buy $1,000 or sell $1 million, call us from our ads in the Overstreet Price Guide, or visit ClassicsIncorporated.com to learn how we can help maximize the potential of your comics. Comics Guarantee, LLC, also known as CGC, is the comic book hobby's only independent third-party expert grading and certification service. CGC's restoration detection, pedigree, and grading experts are known and trusted all around the world for their keen eyes, knowledge of comic book history, and consistent grading. CGC has the best tamper-evident, state-of-the-art comic holder our hobby has ever seen for safe storage of your favorite comic books. Go to www.cgccomics.com to find out how to submit your favorite comic books for certification and to see why the world's top collectors and sellers use CGC for safely buying and selling comics through the mail or on the Internet. For more information, call toll-free 877-662-6642 or visit CGC at www.cgccomics.com. CGC. It just makes sense.
Metropolis Comics is the largest dealer of vintage comic books in the world, with an inventory of over 100,000 gold and silver and Bronze Age comics. Metropolis's website, metropoliscomics.com, has the largest selection of raw and CGC-graded golden, silver, and Bronze Age comic books anywhere. Visit metropoliscomics.com today and join the Metropolis mailing list. Call 1-800-229-METRO or visit metropoliscomics.com.
You're listening to World Talk Radio, where the world comes to talk.
Spider-Man. All right, comic fans, we are back on the zone with my good friends Jonas Rader, Andrew Nussbaum, and Matt Sarnoff. Guys, let's talk a little bit about comic books, since that's what the show is really about. Andrew, yes. Aside from Wolverine, what were you reading growing up and why?
You know, of course, the X-Men were huge. I mean, they were everything. Everybody loved the X-Men. If you didn't love the X-Men, you weren't into comics, you know. But there were other characters like Daredevil, Moon Knight, some of the darker, like Matthew said, you know, characters that went a little bit past your common comic book character stuff, like Batman and Superman and Spider-Man, although those guys are great. You know, you were starting to get into some more adult storylines, and, you know, that's what I like to read. Also, the art was pretty important, I think, for all of us. If a comic book looked good, you usually would grab it and, you know, be interested in starting to read it, even if it wasn't something you were used to or had seen before. If the art was good, if the covers were you know, dynamic, that would
Who did you like, though? Which artists?
I love John Byrne, of course, Frank Miller, Bill, is it Sienkiewicz or Sienkiewicz?
Sienkiewicz.
Sienkiewicz, all right, that's a third pronunciation. Whatever, the guy who did Moon Knight.
What about Obnoxio the Clown, though? Wasn't that
no.
He was good,
like,
but, you know.
My favorite?
Gru the Barbarian? Gru the Wanderer?
Can I crack jokes at all, or is that not cool?
You can absolutely crack jokes, as we can't hear you.
Oh, okay.
But just don't do it while I'm talking, Jonas.
Sorry.
Bastard.
Hi, Matt.
Anyway,
hey.
Adams, Broughton, all those guys. Those guys were great. The guy who did Alien Legion. Who was that, VJ?
Alien Legion. That was
an Adams.
That was an Art Adams, was it?
I think it was. Neil Adams.
Neil Adams?
I think it might have been Neil Adams.
I think it was Art, but okay, go keep going.
That artwork was amazing.
And was there a particular storyline that you still remember to this day?
Out of any comic book?
Yeah.
It has to be the X-Men when they were doing their, either with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants or the Proteus. There's a couple of issues there where they're dealing with the, what is it, Proteus 126, 127, John Byrne, Terry Austin, everybody at their best.
Wolverine was on his own and he, like, the X-Men got captured.
That's another one. I mean,
like,
yeah, there's so many.
Issue 133.
Just
yeah,
so much.
Yeah, that's really good. What about you, Matt? What were you into when you were growing up? Was it the same stuff, or?
I think it was the same. Definitely, I was fanatical about Frank Miller's writing and his style of art, which I think at the time was really different, you know. Yeah. And also, he also incorporated martial arts, you know, way ahead of the mainstreaming of, you know, Hong Kong movies and all that stuff.
Now, when you think of Frank Miller, now you, for anybody out there, we haven't really talked about what we're doing today, but Matthew's a screenwriter, an aspiring screenwriter, and aspiring director, and he's out in L.A. trying to make it big, and we're all crossing our fingers knowing he's going to make it soon, and then he'll take care of us for the rest of our lives. We won't have
right.
to do our lousy jobs.
It's only a matter of time.
Damn right.
It's only a matter of time. We all believe in you, Matt.
100%.
So you better make it big, because I don't want to sell comic books the rest of my life.
And I don't want to sell comic books.
Have you ever noticed Frank Miller's influence in any of your writing or how you look at setting up a blocking a scene or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think that it's cyclical because I think he's definitely was influenced by noir filmmaking
mm-hmm.
because of the light and shadow that he uses, particularly more recently in his black and white stuff. But back then, you know, I think the whole, like, underworld feeling that he gave to Kingpin and Daredevil was, you know, influenced by crime, the crime genre in movie as well as in literature. But, so I think it's definitely, I think he drew from those sources and has inspired tons of filmmakers.
Sure.
You know, obviously Robert Rodriguez, with whom he's collaborated, and Quentin Tarantino. And hopefully he's influenced me, you know, because he's just such a powerful artist in my life, you know,
yeah.
Someone who I've watched, you know, I've been a fan of as an artist and a writer, and now as a filmmaker, he's just doing amazing things.
No.
I think my style is a little bit more towards the, like, action-adventure rather than the really dark crime stuff. But that's just a question of style, you know.
Right.
Can
Jonas,
I add something?
We were mentioning before how Andrew and Matt are really great artists, and you're also a really talented artist, but not so much in the illustrative sense, more in an abstract sense, and you do a lot of paintings. I'm just interested, do you ever, when you're painting, when you're doing your stuff, do you ever, is there anything ever from comic books that you kind of feel has influenced you in terms mm-hmm. of maybe not so much as your the subject matter, but more or less in terms of how you're drawing or how you're painting?
I would think the only thing that might have influenced me were colors, like certain colors that were, you know, kind of put together in a character's costume.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, not really the actual pencils of the pencil or drawings of specific characters or scenes, because no, not really. But
okay, all right, that's
yeah.
cool. Now, Joe, when
Jake,
you, what's that?
Yes.
Jake. Yeah, I was gonna say, when you were collecting comic books, were there ever times where you kind of walked away from it, and then what drew you back? Do you remember? I mean, you're not reading anything right now, are you?
No, I'm not currently reading any comic books, but definitely into when anything comes out in the movies, I'll run out and see it. Like mm-hmm. You know, Spider-Man 3 comes out, I'm going to definitely run out and see it, or, you know, X-Men 3, or, you know, any
Fantastic
of those.
Fantastic Four 2.
Yeah, they're going to have Silver Surfer in FF2.
That's going to be great.
Yeah, I hope they do it well. I saw the trailer the other day, and it looks okay. He looks a little like the Liquid Metal Terminator.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Is his boss in it?
Galactus?
Yeah.
Apparently he is.
That's going to be interesting.
Galactus.
Yeah. He actually comes to Earth. He's the Herald of Galactus, just like they did in FF48, and he's basically getting Earth ready to be, you know, eaten by Galactus.
Actually, can I just add,
sure.
I just saw the trailer for Ghost Rider,
Yes.
And that looks really good.
Yeah, who was playing Ghost Rider, if I might ask?
Nicolas Cage.
Nick Cage.
Yes.
Hello.
On second thought.
H.I. McDonough.
Now, do you thought the trailer looked really good, huh?
I thought it did.
What about you, Matt?
I think, you know, that I don't know the book very well,
yeah.
But I think that character certainly translates well to the screen because he rides a motorcycle and has a flaming head.
Mm-hmm. I think You have the character itself looks really cool. It's hard. I think it's kind of difficult to translate that to the real world where a guy's walking around with a flaming skull.
Yeah.
But they seem to have done that pretty well. But the storyline seems to be a basic storyline that I've seen 1,000 times, and I'm hoping it's not one of the same old tired, you know, demon coming up from heaven, hell to take over the earth, blah blah blah. I'm hoping they do something a little bit different with it. I always like Nick Cage, and he has a tremendous passion for comic books. In fact, when he even after he sold his comic book collection, when he first got the role in Ghost Rider, he called us up and we sent him out an entire run of Ghost Rider for him to use as material for him to, you know, learn about the character and figure out what he was going to bring to the table with the character. Andrew, what's your favorite comic book movie?
My favorite comic book movie? I have to give it a tie.
Okay.
I have to be fair to both films. It's got to be the first X-Men movie and the first Spider-Man movie.
Okay.
Nice.
I mean, there's no with a close runner-up, and because I'm a Marvel guy, but a close runner-up, and a lot of people are going to disagree with me. I know it. To Batman Begins with Christian Bale.
It's a great movie.
It was awesome.
Great.
That's Batman.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the story of Batman, not the other ones, in my opinion. But the first X-Men, the first Spider-Man were done just as well. It adapted to the screen, so if you never read the comic books, you'd be in tune and, you know, in touch with the characters.
What about you, Joe?
Best comic book movie? I mean, how could I disagree with what he just said?
But I
will say that the sequels to both those movies that he originally mentioned were excellent.
Okay, cool.
Well.
What about you, Matt?
I've been thinking a lot lately about Batman Begins, because of the fact that fear is such a powerful theme in
that's
that story,
awesome.
And the fact that that's such a huge part of the Batman character and the way that they tie it into his entire psychology in terms of him losing his parents and him becoming a vigilante, and then also the fact that we live in a world now where fear is a commodity that can be used, you know, to sell products, to promote candidates, to do a lot of different things politically. So I think it's a really powerful movie, a really great film.
The more I watch it, I've seen it probably a half dozen times, the more I like it. I'd say there are a couple of movies that really stand out in my mind. The first Superman just still blows me.
Absolutely.
And the second Superman,
sure. It's a classic.
Yeah,
I love the second Superman, and it just was so much fun for me as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would have to say, it's a character that not too many Americans are familiar with, but it's the Phantom. Billy Zane played the Phantom, and
I really
loved that movie because it had a tremendous sense of innocence to it, and even though I'm not a huge fan of the Phantom, I believe it captured the true essence of what the character was, and it was a fun, lighthearted movie, and I think it was Catherine Zeta-Jones played one of the femme fatales in the movie, and this is when she was starting off before she had the old man, just like 10 kids for him or whatever the hell she's done, but she looked so hot in that movie, and that was probably the best thing about the movie. But, you know, let's segue now, guys, and let's talk about women. All
yes,
right.
Now, gotta go
second,
now.
A second favorite
care,
topic.
Guys.
Now, Andrew, watch your mouth and button up your pants. guys, we grew up in the 70s. And
We did?
We did.
We did. And
well, really, the early 80s when we started to realize females.
We were growing up in the 70s. I noticed women in the 70s.
Well, you noticed women.
Still, like a zygote, probably.
Yeah, you're Italian.
Yeah, it happens. It's in the 70s. Let's go decade by decade. Hottest women of the 70s. Anybody jump in?
Jessica Lange?
Farrah Fawcett, baby.
I know she's not necessarily the most popular sex symbol, but I had a thing for Heather Thomas on The Fall Guy.
Wait. Matt, I'm going to have to ask you, Heather Thomas or Heather Locklear?
Thomas.
I liked Heather Thomas at the time. I mean, I was only 8 years old, so what did I know? But
wow. Jonas, Heather Thomas or Heather Locklear?
Hmm. How about Stacks from BJ and the Bear?
Wow, okay, okay.
I mean, that's 70s. Hello, Locklear.
Hello, Locklear. And Andrew?
I'm just going to jump over to a major motion picture. The Spy Who Loved Me, Barbara Bach.
Wow. Ooh. Well, no, but you have to answer the Heather Locklear, Heather Thomas.
Oh, Heather Thomas. She's,
okay.
She was kind of like...
That's a no-brainer.
White trashy, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
She's a roadie.
I kind of liked Linda Carter, and I liked Olivia Newton-John in Grease.
Good
yeah.
call.
Yeah.
That girl. Wonder owner. Woman. Linda Carter was just unbelievable. Watching her spin around every week was just... ridiculous. then let's shoot over to the 80s. You know, we have a lot of stuff going on in the 80s.
Man.
Matt Jonas, Corey Haim or Corey Feldman?
That's a tough question.
That is. Corey Feldman's a good actor.
I'm going to plead the fifth on that because they're just not even worth talking
about.
Oh,
no.
Yeah. Are they dead? Or?
No. Of course not.
They're doing voiceover work now.
Oh, they are. But they were both in rehab separately. Are they okay? All right, I hope
they're
so.
They're okay. Jonas, seriously, women from the 80s, who are your hottest?
Women?
Come on, Jonas, you sound like you're on Valium today, man. What's up? Pretend you're at a Full Mulder concert.
Full Mulder this Saturday night at the Cutting Room, 9 o'clock.
All right, here in New York City, Jonas's band is going to be live.
If you come, I will buy you a beer.
All right.
You
heard it here on the Comic Zone.
Thank you. Women from the 80s, you know what?
All right, Skip, Jonas, you think about it a little bit. Matt?
Thank you, V.
Well, I realize this is the mid to late 80s, but Madonna was definitely
okay.
A major sex symbol
Andrew?
For us as teenagers.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. The 80s, the woman who played, her name is escaping me,
spit it out.
In side Mark Singer in Beastmaster and also in Sheena.
Tanya Roberts.
Tanya Roberts.
Good call.
Yeah.
I think in the early 80s it was like Elektra and Jean Grey.
Exactly. That's why.
I really loved the British chick from Dynasty, Emma Sams.
Yes.
Oh my God, she drove me nuts.
I got it. Elvira.
thank you, Jonas. I also really loved Polina Poroskova.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, that's right. All those Sports Illustrated chicks.
And let's just, we have a minute till break right now, guys. Mm. Let's just do real quick the 90s. Let's go around. I'm going to say Salma Hayek and Angelina Jolie.
Oh, wow.
For very
Britney Spears reasons. In her prime.
Who?
Britney Spears in her prime.
Wow, with the little bacon strip on the cover of the Sports Illustrated, the Rocket Rolling Stone magazine. Yeah, I remember that. And Matthew?
Bridget Fonda.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, she's hot. But I have
white
it.
White female?
I have it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Pamela Anderson.
You're right. That's the correct answer.
That's it. For the new All century right. as well.
My producers are telling me we need to take a cold shower, and we're going to break for commercials. We'll be right back on the Comic Zone
Funny.
On worldtalkradio.com.
Funny.
Okay, comic fans, on our next segment of The Zone, the guys will be back and we'll be talking about other pop culture greats like Star Trek and Saturday Night Live, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats, Super Friends, you name it, we're going to talk about it in the next 20 minutes right here on The Comic Zone.
What's going to happen if you ever lose any of your comic books because of theft, flood, fire, or just plain negligence? Will the loss be covered by your homeowner's or renter's insurance? Maybe, maybe not. It's never a good idea to trust your regular insurance policy to cover a loss of your precious collectibles. Insure your comics and any comic-related collectible with insurance people who know what you collect. Collectibles Insurance Agency insures comic books and over 100 other kinds of collectibles for over 18,000 collectors just like you. Get more information now. Go to www.collectinsure.com and click on the Comic Zone button. Use use the special online form to send for our colorful free brochure now. That's www.collectinsure.com. It's the only place where smart collectors get their insurance.
Sign up for the best free weekly one-stop shopping source for news about comic industry events, auction results, the latest books, and the vast history of the medium with which to put all the great new stuff in context. Visit scoop.diamondgalleries.com or click on the hyperlink on the show homepage. And remember, it's completely free.
Located in the heart of Metropolis's gallery, GothamCityArt.com features hundreds of pieces of original comic book artwork. Gotham City Art is dedicated to the artwork market and the legendary creators who brought to life comic book mythology as we know it today. Visitors can search GothamCityArt.com by artist or title and choose from hundreds of unique pieces of original comic book artwork for sale. Yes, there is a difference. Visit GothamCityArt.com or email info@GothamCityArt.com today.
Listen, the world is talking. World Talk Radio.
We're back on the Comic Zone on WorldTalkRadio.com. Vincent Zorzolo here with my three pals, Andrew, Matt, and Jonas, talking about our lives growing up in Rockaway Beach, New York. Pop culture pandemonium going on. It's basically 1 hour of just reliving our childhood, which is a great thing to do. I suggest anybody out there grab a couple of your friends, get a couple of beers, and do the same thing.
We should get Suzanne Osterball on the phone.
Suzanne Osterball. Suzanne Osterball was this really interesting girl from our neighborhood when we were growing up.
A popular girl.
Very popular. A sweet, level-headed girl, too. Mm-hmm. I remember my earliest memory of Suzanne Osterball was her dragging me around in a headlock up and down the block, my block on 134th Street until I would give her a kiss.
Oh.
Did she have a Duran jacket on?
What's that?
Did she have a Duran jacket on at the time?
Probably. She was into Duran. That's true.
She was into
That's funny. Guys, let's talk a little bit about stuff that you miss most about your childhood. Any one of you want to start, please feel free.
Well, we don't have enough time.
Pick one thing, guys. Come on, let's do this fast. People are going to get bored if they hear you dead air.
How about just like getting a phone chain at like 11 o'clock in the morning, deciding to play football, and everybody meeting at my house, and we just play football all day on my block?
Yeah, that's definitely great. The spontaneity of having all that free time, having all your friends around you, being able, you know, and knowing that everyone's waiting for that call or, you know, whatever it may be, the plan to come together, and that we had in our arsenal quite a few hilarious and fun activities to choose from. If it snowed, we knew it was going to be a snowball fight. You know, depending on the season, we might get on our bikes and just raise hell or run
through
other people's backyards and climb on their roofs. You know, we did a lot of crazy stuff, and the spontaneity of being able to just make it happen on the drop of a hat was, you know, part of being young.
Yeah. What about you, Andrew?
I agree with all of it, and along with a complete and utter lack of responsibility.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it was about you, and it was about, you know, your day, and, you know, a Saturday came along, and it was just like, what am I going to do today? You know, how am I going to, you know, spend the time? And, you know, for myself or for me and my friends, and it was just, it was the whole aspect of being free as a bird. You're never as free as you are when you're a teenager.
I think I remember loving to hang out with you guys. I remember loving playing sports all the time. Going to the beach in the summer was so great.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved coming out of my house and walking up two blocks to the beach was great. Even school was fun. I mean, we worked our butts off, and we were smart kids, but had a lot of fun in school. We really did.
What, the days seemed longer because then you'd get up, you'd have breakfast. Seemed like that, you know, you actually got time to spend with your family then. You'd go to school, and then after school, you know, it was a whole new day. You know, a whole new day would start. Yeah. You'd play after school. You'd have dinner. You'd play after dinner. So it was like you just have maybe you have so much energy, and maybe it's true what they say, which is that as you get older, the time feels shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, a day was like a week is now.
I remember sleeping over mats a lot, and we would watch Friday night videos. I don't know if many of your listeners remember that, but there was basically a show, I think it was before MTV. Every Friday night, they'd play like five videos that were out, and we were just bored out of our minds. We watched that, and we watched a sketch comedy show called Fridays.
Yep.
I think Michael Richards was on that. And I remember, you know, coming home from school, watching G.I. Joe.
Does he hate Jewish people, too?
What's that?
Does he hate Jewish people, too?
I don't know what's his story. That's some crazy stuff, man.
Sorry. I have a lot of repressed anger.
Thundercats.
Just kidding.
I remember Chitara. I liked Chitara. I mean, that was a pretty hot cartoon character. I hear nothing but silence.
I don't remember Chitara.
I don't remember Chitara.
You don't remember Thundercats?
She was a Micronaut.
She was a Micronaut.
Wasn't that Baron Kars' girlfriend?
Baron Kars' girlfriend, right, exactly.
No.
Wow, that's good. That's great. And Saturday Night Live was such a huge part of our childhood growing up in the 70s and 80s when it was really great.
Yeah, we watched it. I remember watching it every week probably from the beginning. I mean, you know,
Absolutely.
We were only five when it came out, but it was a ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And, you know, it went through ups and downs. There were some seasons were just great consistently, and then it would go through a transition just like it's going through now.
Eddie Murphy.
And it would rebuild. And Eddie Murphy, when Eddie Murphy came out, I think that was a huge thing for all of us. Everyone knew that was just going to be a huge star. His comedy videos, Raw and Delirious, were just, you know, those were huge things we watched over and over again.
I remember Delirious so well.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Delirious in probably 20 years, and I bought a DVD at a comic convention, one of those bootlegs, and I watched it, and I howled. I could not. I remembered all the lines, but it was still felt like I was watching it for the first time. And I had two friends of mine who are in their mid-20s watch it with me, who grew up in Europe and never were exposed to this, and they were dying.
Because you think that a lot of comedy would be specific to time in pop culture.
And one of them had never even seen The Honeymooners, and when he does the whole bit with Norton and Ralph Cranham being gay and everything, they were crying. It was just, I was surprised at that, and it was nice to see that it translated so well across generations and didn't, you know, you didn't really need to have all that background information to get it and to laugh.
But foreigners laugh at everything.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess so. And then, you know, you talk about stuff that's that I remember the first time going to see Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The first scene, that was it. You didn't need to see the rest of the movie. It was so good, that first scene with him escaping the treasure trove area.
Throw me the idol. I'll throw you the whip.
Movies like that, I remember the look and feel of the theater that I saw it in.
Yeah.
Because both Star Wars and Raiders of the Lost Ark, I saw in not close to home. I saw them in upstate New York and in New England for just whatever reason. That's where I was probably in the summer when they came out, and so they were probably theaters I had only been to once. But what I remember is like the theater, because it was such a monumental experience to see those movies for the first time in the theater.
I remember E.T. You guys remember seeing that?
I think we saw that every weekend for about 4 months.
I saw that with you for the first time, Matt.
I remember seeing
it in Manhattan at the 32nd Street Theater on 2nd Avenue with my parents. It was 1980, right?
Yeah, I think right around then.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
And that was us. I mean, that was, you know,
yeah,
you saw that and you identified with that kid.
Was that Eli in the front of Elliot's in the basket?
Eli was E.T.
What's that? What about E.T.?
Eli was E.T.
Oh, Jonas's little brother was E.T. That's funny.
again, we were, just to add, VJ, we were very lucky in, I mean, we grew up in an age where it was like, one year we were watching Star Wars, the next year we were watching Jaws, then Star Wars, then we were watching The Empire Strikes Back,
Rocky.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, Rocky, right, Return of the Jedi, Apocalypse Now, I mean, you know, some of the greatest movies of all time, which, you know, people are, you know, staking their whole lives on, you know, if you want to get into filmmaking, those are the movies that you're going to be studying. And it's just, we saw them, you know, even though we were young kids, we knew what was going on. I mean, I would go see these movies with a babysitter or my sister on a weekly basis. I mean, I saw these movies in the theater maybe, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 times. You know, wait, this was before VHS, this was before Betamax.
Yeah,
you know?
That was the only way to see it.
And it was $2.50. You walked into the matinee, you got a burger at Bun and Burger, and you went to the movies every single Saturday. You know, so.
And we had that, and we had comic books, and now what's interesting is that the renaissance of that kind of that genre of film, which is, you know, the most popular kind of movie, is comic book movies,
right.
Nowadays.
Graphic novels.
You know, so we back then had those great films and comic books that we loved. Now kids have video games, I guess, and
computers.
The comic book movies.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of interesting how it's changed a bit. I do try to read some comic books now, and they are very different, and they have a different feel to them and a different level of maturity, and I can appreciate why a kid growing up today would rather play a video game than read a comic book, but I definitely still see there's a tremendous level of talent in the comic book market.
Well, you could start selling video games then, V.
I could sell video or vintage
supplement
video games, Atari 2600, Pac-Man.
Yes, Asteroids.
Combat.
Defender.
Combat, yeah.
Pitfall. River Raid.
I just bought my nephew's a Nintendo Wii for the holidays, and boy, it was just, I remember the joy of opening up an Atari 2600 and just losing my mind, or a ColecoVision, or Intellivision, or Nintendo systems, and these kids the same way, they were going nuts and having so much fun playing all the games, just like we did.
Mm.
You know? I mean, we loved video games. It was too much fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think we also had things like Dungeons and Dragons, mm-hmm. and other role-playing adventure-type games that probably stimulate the same part of a kid's imagination that video games do now, because video games are so sophisticated now, where kids are making quick decisions, and there's all kinds of alternate storylines that you can explore in a non-linear way. I think that was what D&D was for us in a lot of ways, sort of that
Jonas,
kind of adventure role-playing.
Jonas, when we played Dungeons & Dragons, you were always the halfling, right?
Oh, yeah.
If anybody out there, Jonas was very tiny as a child. Very large head, but very
except
small body.
Except for where it counted.
whoa.
Take it easy.
Hey, this is a family
type
show.
Of show.
This is a family show.
I'm sorry, man.
I'm just kidding. It's fine.
Okay.
But, Joe, you used to play Dungeons & Dragons a lot, right?
Absolutely.
What were your favorite parts of Dungeons & Dragons?
I used to like all the dice with, like, 30 sides and 20 sides. And, like, I was into the dice for some reason.
Dice? All right. I actually liked, you know, fighting goblins and orcs and stuff. But, yeah, the dice are pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe it's just the gambler in me. Like, I used to like to roll the dice.
Ah, I see.
Oh, by the way, I need to add this because I think I have to go. Blondie was my first hard-on. I forgot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. The whole group or just Deborah Harry?
Yes, Deborah Harry with the black sun.
The whole group.
All right. So, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. You've been nothing but a wealth of information, and this
thank
has
you.
Been very fun to have
thank
you on.
Thank you. I love you.
I love you too, man. Good luck with the new job.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Take care. I think we're coming up on the hour.
Oh, no.
And, I hear the music coming on. I want to thank you both for joining me. And this was a lot of fun for me. And I hope the listeners out there really got a kick out of it. And you can know us a little bit better and see, you know, probably share a lot of the same memories of your childhood, too. Until next week, we will see you on the Comic Zone. We're going to have a great artist, Michael Golden, big in the 70s with Micronauts, who will be on the show. And until then, remember, it's all about peace, love, and comic books.
Unexpected. The weakness could be engine stop on it, but I have no fear, because London is drowning out.